Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is The Triple Threat with Sean Pendergast and Rich Lord.
It might be a light switch. It ain't no drop off.
Be a part of the show at 713-572-4610.
Unjustifiably in a position that I'd rather not be in, but the cream rise to the top, oh yeah.
This is Houston sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Hey, Matt, can you just do an open with all Macho Man Randy Savage cuts? That would be great.
I could certainly do that.
That would be my request for Brian McDonald. What's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. Nice to be with you. We're live at Little Woodrow's in Edo, where the weather is very conducive to day drinking, outside drinking. They've even got the fans with the misters going outside, and it's only like 75 degrees right now. So it's a beautiful day to come on out here. I would say this is the aftermath here in Edo of a somber night last night over at Minute Maid Park, which we will delve into in depth today here on the show. Great to be with you, as always, on a football Friday. Football with some baseball certainly more than sprinkled in on a Friday here at Little Woodrow's in Edo. Rich Lord out sick. My name is Sean Pendergast, as you know. To my right is a man that you can hear on the Bull Rush with Jeremy Branham. And he also is you're our feet on the street as well with a lot of our Texans coverage.
Yeah,
too,
I am. Jeremy and I are both out
Josh
there.
Josh Beard, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Josh Beard. This is I'm going to be on three times today. I'm doing three shows. So this isn't just a football Friday. This is a Josh Beard Friday.
It's a Josh Beard Friday on Sports Radio 610.
I just coined that just now. Yeah. Jeremy and I both do Texans, but I'm obviously way better at it than him. So I would be like, if you're like, we have a Texans expert, then it would absolutely be me. Yeah.
Okay.
Over anybody.
What makes you so much better than him?
I'm prettier. I'm faster, probably. If we got into a foot race, I'd probably be able to. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even
he looks pretty spry.
This round mounted get down can fly, baby. All right.
I don't know, man. The eye test. I would take you in a fist fight against Jeremy for sure.
Foot race, wrestling match, any kind of IQ test, anything
video
like
games,
that.
You're a big video game
video.
Guy.
I don't even have to bring that up. That's not fair. It has to be a competition, Sean, okay? It can't be something where I am clearly the winner.
Well, I appreciate you sitting in for Rich for the first 2 hours today. You'll be with us through. You're going to stick around for Lisa Ann at 4 o'clock.
Of course I'm going to stick around for Lisa Ann.
She's one of your fantasy football soulmates.
Yes,
from our panel at the Fantasy Football Forum. And then you will give the hot tag to John McClain, who will come in for the rest of the show. So we've got a lot of stuff to get into on the show today. And, of course, everything starts with last night over at Minute Maid Park. And I will say it right now, pretty much everything I thought would happen in this series didn't happen at all. Other than the Game 1 win by the Astros, this series did not go according to anything that I thought. The only caveat I will say in trying to stick up for myself, and my grade on prognosticating in this series has to be an abject F-, no question. I had the Astros in 5. Even when they got down 3-1, I thought they'd win game 5 and 6 and send this thing to 7 because of Verlander and Cole. I think Verlander pitched badly last night. He just got, there's a short porch home run, but both teams, they don't move the fence back for the Astros when they're up, so both teams had a shot. The Red Sox were the better team in this series. The one thing I will say is that when I thought it'd be the Astros in 5, the way I saw the series unfolding was Verlander and Cole taking the first two games. I thought the big momentum shift for the Red Sox, and obviously on paper you're going to go, well, of course it was a momentum shift. They responded to the only Astros win with a win. But the momentum shift to me was clearly when they fell behind to the Astros in game 2. They took a lead on Cole. The Astros came back and took a lead 4-2. And then the biggest hit in the series to me was the Jackie Bradley Jr. 3-run double that gave the Red Sox the lead in that game. And after that game, I said, look, I know I took the Astros in 5, but of the two teams in this series, I don't think home field's going to matter at all in this series.
Right.
I think the biggest thing that a team could accomplish was the Red Sox beating one of Verlander and Cole. They wound up beating both of them by the time the series was over. And kudos to the Red Sox. The better team won this series.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't even close. The Red Sox, after the game, obviously there's a lot of anger. I'm really hungover today. If our boss is listening, I'm not hungover. I am in great shape, and I've done my job admirably today. Thank you very much. But I'm exhausted and very hungover because, like, there's that sports sadness and sports depression that comes along with a loss like that. But you can't look at the last two games and say that the Astros got screwed or that the Astros that the Red Sox shouldn't have won. They earned that win. They earned their trip to the World Series. They played out of their minds. They were incredible. Their bullpen was great. Their starting pitching was really good. Their bats were incredible. And the Astros just weren't there after game one. I don't know what happened. Well, like, that's at game one, they looked like they had all the swagger in the world. And it looked like the bullpen fell apart. And then all the other dominoes started to fall after that.
I think there was this, the Red Sox were very opportunistic in those four wins. Mm-hmm. And by the time game four rolled around, there was this kind of pending sense of doom anytime the Red Sox would be in a two-out situation with runners on base. You just felt like they were going to somehow come through.
Yeah.
And in game four, the Astros just shot themselves in the foot too many times. Forget about the interference on the Altuve potential home run. That's not why they lost game four, and it's certainly not why they lost the series. Let's hear from manager A.J. Hinch, who I think echoes what a lot of us are saying here in town. That was a tough way to end the season.
I don't know the right words, the right tone, the right content. I mean, it's a extremely disappointed clubhouse because we want to keep playing. We feel like we set the bar exactly where it should be around here, which the World Series is the only thing that was going to make this team feel like we accomplished much. I think over time, you know, the things will come out, you know, franchise record wins and, you know, a division championship and things that just aren't common. Like, it's not normal. It's not easy. But it's a pretty hollow feeling when the season abruptly ends the way that it does.
One more from A.J. Hinch. He says what you and I have just been saying, Josh, that Boston outplayed them these last four games.
You can break down the series however you want, whether it's their two-out hitting or, you know, they took it to us and they won games. You know, we were in those games and we had opportunities. And when you get to, you know, two evenly matched teams, you know, up against each other, you know, there's going to be swings and momentum and big at-bats and a little bit of luck, a little bit of bad luck, and they outplayed us. You know, they did a really good job of having an excellent game plan and going and executing it.
Last one here, Justin Verlander, the loser of last night's game. By the way, a 24-inning scoreless streak in elimination games ending last night in, I guess, with the third or fourth inning when J.D. Martinez hit that home run. He said the Red Sox just a little bit better.
Playoffs, it's kind of flip a coin sometimes. It's whoever's playing the best baseball at the time. We were dealing with a ton of injuries. I mean, as you could tell, but the guys battled, and I felt like we gave them a good fight. It just wasn't enough at the end. They played great baseball.
A lot of things happened in this series, and you gain a greater appreciation for last year's title when you see how hard it is to just get to the World Series this year, let alone win a World Series. I'll credit Adam Wexler with these bullet points. He tweeted these over the last couple days. A lot of things happened with these Astros, Josh, that weren't happening throughout the regular season. You know, I don't think anybody in this series for the Astros, not one player, played to the level that we expected them to play in this series. You know, maybe a guy like Tony Kemp who hit 300, you know, three something in this series, but even he had a base running error late in the game in game four. But just a few items. That was the first time Verlander had fewer than five strikeouts in a start last night, other than the time he was ejected earlier this year, early in a start. Verlander, as I mentioned, gave up runs in an elimination game for the first time in over two dozen innings.
Yeah.
Gerrit Cole allowed five runs in a game in game two for the first time all season. He never did that in a start this season. He does it in game two of the ALCS. Dallas Keuchel didn't have any strikeouts in his start, which is a little weird, and he had probably more fly balls than you'd normally have in a game for Keuchel. Ryan Pressly walks a couple guys in an inning of relief. So, guys, just some of the guys are banged up, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But guys, just at the end of the day, they picked a really bad time to play some of their worst baseball.
One of the only people that I could say lived up to what we would expect from him or maybe was a little bit better was Marwin Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely somebody that we're going to have to get to. But even he had his moments where he wasn't exactly what you'd want to see from him.
Yeah.
But like this entire series, like I love that you said, like, well, at the end, we just didn't have enough. You didn't have enough at the beginning, technically. You had enough at the very beginning, but then in game two, you didn't have enough. In the middle part, you didn't have enough. And then at the end, you still didn't have enough because this entire series is going to be marred by hitting batters while there's runners in scoring position or on base, by pass balls, and by hits to the warning track. I never want to see another hit to the warning track ever again, or I'm gonna vomit on sight.
You're right. No, there were certainly some of those baseball things working where you go, you know, just line drives right at people.
Yeah.
Probably the most prominent one, the Bregman one to end the game in game four. You know, if Benedetti puts all his chips to the middle of the table and that thing bounces and skips past him, we're talking about a rubber match last night, you know, after a 2-2 tie to start that series. A couple from Alex Bregman here, who was, without question, the Astros' best player during the regular season. He was their leadoff hitter these last couple games. He says that these Astros, in his opinion, the 2018 Astros, were a better team than the 2017 Astros.
To be honest with y'all, this year's team is better than last year's team, I believe. But ball's got to bounce your way in the postseason. It didn't. It's tough, and we'll learn from it. And everyone in here will have a little bit of an edge to play with next year, a little bit of a chip on our shoulder, knowing that we believe we should have been back-to-back champions.
I think if you simulated, you know, a computer simulation between the 2018 Astros and the 2017 Astros, the 2018 Astros would probably win.
Yeah.
On paper, they were a better team. They had a deeper bullpen, a more productive bullpen, a closer who wasn't wetting his pants throughout the final month of the season and the postseason. The lineup probably, you know, maybe, you know, wire to wire wasn't as the everyday lineup. Probably wasn't as good as 2017, but the drop-off from 17 to 18 wasn't nearly as big as the gap in the pitching staff.
Right, exactly.
When you add Garrett Cole in there as the number two starter.
Yeah, and I mean, he's right. And it wasn't even a playoff thing. There wasn't even a drop-off in the playoffs. It wasn't things, you know, winding out right in the playoffs because they played really well against the Indians. They made the Indians look silly. And then they come out and they have a great first game against the Red Sox. So everything was fine up until that point. And then at some point, they just lost their swagger. They lost their energy, and things just started to collapse on them.
At the end of the day, like, the Red Sox won 108 games.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, this isn't something where if they had gone to the World Series and played the Brewers and lost in five to the Brewers or something, like, then we'd be like, what the hell went wrong? You choked. What are you doing? Like, this is the team that had home field advantage. You know, this is the team that won 108 games. David Price finally pitching a good game.
That's like, so annoying. I'm so annoyed that he did that last night.
All right, let's stick with the Astros here, and let's take a quick look ahead. We'll talk more Astros baseball as we roll on throughout the show. Dallas Keuchel, he spoke after the game. What does his future hold? And what do we think of each of the free agents that they have? What do we think the percentage chance they bring each of these guys back? We'll go through the list coming up next. You're listening to the Triple Threat. Sean Pendergast, Josh Beard in for the first couple hours of the show for Rich Lord. You're listening to Sports Radio 610.
Personally, and I told some of these guys this after the game, the heart of this team really kind of unparalleled. We had guys playing through so much. I mean, I'm not going to name anybody specifically, but I think you could see some of it on the field and how hard guys are grinding to go out there and play and try to help us win. To be a part of that as a whole, it's something special. You don't see it all the time. And I was really proud of all these guys this season. For giving, I mean, more than 100%, if that's possible. It's the truth, though. These guys could give nothing else.
It's still really cool to me to hear Justin Verlander gush about the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
There's still a part of me as a baseball fan who sees Justin Verlander as this gigantic celebrity who was this fictional character that played in another market. You know, guys, that a little like when Randy Johnson came here in 1998 and you're watching him pitch, you go, I can't believe Randy Johnson's on my team. You know, like, this doesn't happen to my team very often. And now the Astros are obviously a star-laden roster that now has a championship pedigree from last year. To me, it's still just really cool. A guy who spent his entire career in another market other than basically the last year and 2 months and he gushes about this team like he's been here since A-ball back in the mid 2000s.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what was so great about this team this season. It was a team of guys that all loved each other. Yeah. Like, this wasn't just guys getting paychecks trying to play baseball. They were like brothers. It was legitimately like a family. Like, it was like watching baseball back in the 90s, like in the mid 90s, when it felt like everybody felt like they were a part of a family when they were a part of a team, and it's kind of gone away from that a little bit. And this team is just so much fun to watch, and that's why I'm disappointed. I'm driving by Minute Maid on my way to get here. Yeah, that was a kick in the pants. I'm like, come on,
I did
man,
it intentionally.
Really?
I feel like it's part of the cathartic process.
Yeah, you got to get past it. You got to move on.
I drove right past that mug.
You know how you're supposed to, like, if there's a breakup, you're supposed to burn all their stuff. Can we burn Minute Maid, or is that again?
I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay, I will. Yeah. I won't do that.
Certainly
then,
not on the air. I'm not going to recommend that.
Oh,
so that's Verlander. I think to me, Josh, the thing about this team, this is two deep runs into the postseason and in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time the only other time that this franchise has made two deep runs into the postseason was 2004 and 2005. This is night and day compared to the aftermath of 2005, where they did it in reverse order. They went to LCS and then World Series that year. Last year, of course, they win the World Series. Now they lose in the LCS. It's night and day in terms of how people like Justin Verlander or some of the young guys on this team should feel. Some of the guys who are going to have to make decisions at some point as to whether or not they want to continue to be part of this, or if they're going to chase money, because this is not going to be a franchise that's just going to pay everybody. They can't. They can't afford to without going into luxury tax territory and things like that. But back then, that team was an old team, last legs, bad GM. Mm-hmm. This team is a young nucleus with a stacked minor league system, with the best general manager in baseball pulling the trigger on these moves. I think it's going to be interesting to see which guys get big deals, which guys don't get big deals. Mm-hmm. It's staggered nicely enough to where they don't have to make too many of these decisions in the same offseason. Next season will be very interesting because Cole and Verlander are going to come up at the same time. And I think ideally you would like to continue to have two hammers at the top of the rotation. Dallas Keuchel is the big name that I think most people, I think everybody, maybe even including Dallas himself, have anticipated this is not going to, you know, this is his last year as a Houston Astro. Do you feel any differently now?
No, not at all. I mean, at the beginning of the season, Jeremy and I, whenever we were doing shows on the weekends, we kind of talked about and threw around the idea, like, it's okay that Dallas Keuchel was pitching poorly the way he was, or pitching under what you expect from Dallas Keuchel, because maybe you can get a discount on him. But even now, I don't know that you want to do that. I don't know that you tie up money with Dallas Keuchel. I've loved his tenure in Houston. I've loved watching him pitch. But if you're telling me that you have to choose, it's a choice if you're going to keep a pitcher between him and Charlie Morton. It's an easy choice for me. And then looking forward, you get to save money for other guys that you're going to need it for later on.
Let's hear from Keuchel, and then we'll continue with our assessment of him. Dallas Keuchel said after the game, he's not sure what the future is going to hold.
I'd more than love to be back here.
Yeah.
I've made that known since day one, but I've given my heart and soul for seven full years, and I don't know. I mean, this is the opportunity of a lifetime, and if you're fortunate enough to be in a position, you'd be a fool not to test the waters.
More from Dallas Keuchel. He said he didn't think it would end like this.
I don't think anybody in here thought that we were going to lose five games in the championship series. I think we all thought it was going to be the reverse side, but that's just the way it happens. And we got outplayed in every aspect, and now we're packing our bags and seeing if the Red Sox win the World Series.
And finally, last thing, he is, and this is the one that makes it sound kind of like we all see the writing on the wall. He says he's proud of what he's accomplished as an Astro.
I mean, to see through the rebuild and then be on the winning side of a bunch of teams in the last 4 years means a lot to me, just because I came up with 200 lost seasons, so anything's better than that. But the playoffs are a special time, and I hope these young kids are getting their first taste, kind of remember how this feels.
I'm going to say two things here, Josh, that are going to sound like they're opposite. I'm going to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I think both of these things can be true. You can't understate Dallas Keuchel's role in the revival of this franchise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I mean by that is, he was the ace before there were two other aces here. He was mm-hmm. a Cy Young winner in 2015. He was a big reason, one of the biggest reasons why they got back to the postseason finally in 2015. And he was also, if you go back and read the stories about Justin Verlander coming here, it was Dallas Keuchel that made the last-minute sales pitch at literally the 11th hour to tell Justin Verlander about what that clubhouse was all mm-hmm. about. Like, literally, like Luno had to text Keuchel to tell him to get off the phone because we need to get Verlander to agree to this so we can get the paperwork in time to do the deal. And they got it in by seconds. So he's been important not only with what he's done on the mound, but with what he's meant to that clubhouse. He's been one of the faces of this franchise. Until there became 10 faces of this franchise, right, as opposed to just three or four of them, he was one of those three or four before this became a star-laden team with Verlander coming here and Gerrit Cole and Bregman and everybody else. Back in the day, it was just Altuve, Springer, Correa, and Keuchel. Those were the four horsemen of the Astros. But the body of work since the Cy Young year has had just as much sort of uneven, pretty good performance and injury.
Yeah.
As it's had elite performance, maybe even more of the average to above average and injury-laden performance than elite. The only time since that Cy Young year where he's pitched at a, whoa, Dallas Keuchel's on the mound level was the beginning of last year when yep. he started out the season 9-0. Other than that, going back to the beginning of 2016, it's been injuries, it's been average performance. But for that reason, I think some team is going to pay him out there like a number one starter because he is a sellable number one starter to a fan base somewhere.
Yes.
But the Astros know, they know him. He's been in their building. And I just think the numbers are not going to match up for the Astros as to what the market is going to match up to.
What his situation reminds me of is David Price a few years ago. Whenever David Price, he was that ace pitcher, but you saw him starting to decline, but they still kept paying him like a number one, a number two ace because of the name, because of what he had done in the past. It's going to happen with Keuchel. And so you can't spend – I love what he's done in Houston. And you're right. Like, there was a time when there were two faces. It wasn't even Correa. It was just Altuve and Keuchel.
Yes.
You had those two guys before yep. Springer was really even that big, before Correa was even called up. It was Keuchel and Altuve.
Yeah.
And I love him for the past, but this is the business part of sports. This is what sucks about the business part of sports is – somebody that means so much to the team that's been kind of was at one point was like a heart and soul type of guy. An entire city rallied around him and his beard, you know, and you have to watch him go. And I think the majority of the people, you're going to be sad about it, but you're going to be okay with it because of the people that you have there and knowing what not keeping Dallas Keuchel with the Astros means to the franchise moving forward.
Yeah, I've been saying for a couple of years, and it's not, you know, it wasn't any, you know, unique take that nobody else in their minds knew was coming, but I that's the side of the game that I'm always looking at is I have a hard time, and it's probably a disease that I have of my own. I have a hard time enjoying the moment because I'm always looking at Spot Rack to see what the future is.
Yep, that's
the business guy in me, man. It's the, you know, it's the I can't shake that part of my past where I'm always trying to look at what I'm going to sell next month because I've already made quota for this month. So I've been saying for a couple of years, like, the day is going to come. There'll be a day of reckoning where this nucleus that we've all fallen in love with, some of them are going to leave, like characters on a sitcom, man. It's just you don't keep all of them. Some of them get written out of the sitcom. Keuchel's going to be the first one to go, and it'll be unfortunate. The fortunate thing is that based on his performance since, I'll say, the midpoint of last year, I think there are some pieces out there that can give you 80% of what Keuchel gave you for about 5% of the price Keuchel's going to demand.
Absolutely. I mean, they've already got guys that have shown. Josh James is a guy who we've seen go out there, and he throws 101, 102 miles an hour, and he makes guys miss.
Yeah.
And that's something that you could have in the starting rotation, even if not next year, then moving forward in the future. Like, he's a piece of the puzzle where Keuchel isn't, and he's a fraction of the cost.
What percent do you put? Let's rapid fire these real quick, free agents. What percentage for Keuchel coming back would you say?
I'd put it at less than 10%.
Yeah, I was going to say 10%. Just on the off chance they find a hometown discount price that both sides agree on, and if he loves playing here, no state income tax, maybe there's a cost justification in his mind. Marwin Gonzalez.
They have to keep him here. Marwin Gonzalez, what he means, not just at the plate, but what he can do on the field in multiple different positions, they have to keep him around. I'd put it at 90%.
I don't know where he falls on the most valuable players on this team. I mean, obviously, there's some great players on this team who are more valuable than Marwin, but I don't think you get past about the ninth or tenth guy on this roster. including the pitching staff, before you get to Marwin Gonzalez.
You look at utility guys in majors, there are very few guys that are that can do what Marwin Gonzalez does.
I'll say 60% on Marwin that he comes back. I'm not going to say anywhere close to 100 because you never know what the market could do crazy things, and Luno's going to say, oh, you know what? Tony Kemp doesn't have the same type of bat Marwin does, but he can play second base. He can play the outfield positions, maybe, you know. And I think you'd have Kemp and Gonzalez on the team. I'm just saying you rationalize things a little bit. Charlie Morton.
I put this one, this is definitely higher than Dallas Keuchel. I put this one at, I say 50-50. I think 50% chance that Charlie Morton comes back. I think he means more to them. They're going to need somebody in that third starting spot, and Charlie Morton's probably going to be that guy, and he's cheaper than Keuchel.
He's an older guy who I think really...
Brad Peacock
getting presidential mentions last year wasn't even on the roster for the ALCS. I would put Charlie Morton, I'll put it at 45% for Charlie Morton. They have a club option on Brian McCann. I think there's zero chance Brian McCann is back with
gone.
This team.
He's gone.
Martin Maldonado.
Before this series, I would have put it pretty high, but now I don't know. I say they have to keep him around at this point.
Yeah,
but
I don't think they're going to change the calculus on Martin Maldonado based on one bad series.
Yeah, so
for what he brings.
I'll say 60%.
Yeah, I think greater than 50-50. Evan Gattis.
20%.
Yeah,
20%,
same here.
Yeah.
He's a very streaky power hitter who was an afterthought by the end of the postseason.
He was
the last guy on the bench.
Right. He had one good month, and what Tyler White showed you at the end of the season, he can give you exactly what Evan Gattis gave you, maybe even more.
Tony Sipp.
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Not at $6
million. Not at
he's been making
million
$6 million
all,
a year the last 3 years.
I'm going to put it at less than 10% because I just doubt he takes a hometown discount, and I think some team will pay him.
Yeah, I'll say a little higher on Sipp. Like I think I said 10% on Keuchel. I think it's higher on Sipp than Keuchel, so I'll say 30% on Tony Sipp. All right. So I guess the good news is like the only one I would count as a core guy on that list we just said is Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah,
that's it. You know, Morton's a good pitcher who faded the second half of the season. Marwin's a guy we love, but Marwin's one of those guys that I think is more valuable to the Astros than he would be to like 25 other teams in
right.
the league. He's a really good luxury to have on a winning team. All right.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.